And ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to a special edition of Awesome Mania. That's right, it's two nights after the WrestleMania weekend, and it's me, Michael, and your undisputed champion, Mr. Ben Taylor.
It's me. It's Ben Taylor, a.k.a. Sleazy Nugget.
I see we have a continuation from Power Dorks, which your other episode will be out tomorrow.
Yeah. We're transparency, we are recording this the evening of Tuesday, 7th of April. So,
yep, 2 days after the full weekend of WrestleMania. So what we're going to do, just to give everyone a heads up, we're going to do night one now. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to take a quick little break. Yep. And then we're going to do night two. Everything Raw, SmackDown, NXT, and AEW will be done on our regular Saturday episode.
We might discuss Raw a little bit.
Yeah.
Because of something that happened on Raw.
Yeah. But outside of that, the majority of that conversation will be Saturday. Along with news and notes and all that other stuff. So this is just WrestleMania. It's us talking about the pay-per-view both nights. So with that, let's hop in to night one.
Long story short, we figured if we had to do WrestleMania, Dynamite, Raw, SmackDown, Edge 24, Drew Chronicle, we would be here till the quarantine ended.
Got to break it down, man. Got to break it down. So with that, we're going to start with the kickoff show of night number one, which featured Drew Gulak versus Cesaro. First off, we have to both agree you can never go wrong with either Drew Gulak or Cesaro.
Correct.
Because they're both amazing wrestlers. But this match would actually see Cesaro pick up the victory after using what he called the UFO.
Yep. The no hands airplane spin.
Yeah. Let's just say that apparently he's been wanting to do that in WWE for a very long time, and he finally got the clearance to do so.
Yeah, he got he used to use that on the indies.
Yeah. Let's just say seeing that for the first time in who knows how long, it kind of blew my mind.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my God, that was amazing.
Didn't this match feel really short?
It did. But yet again, don't all kickoff matches feel really short?
No, but this felt really short. Mm. And the reason for this is it went 4 minutes and 25 seconds. Spoiler alert. That's over double the length of the Universal title match.
I mean, you were able to see like a glimpse of the good technical abilities of both men, but with such a limited amount of time,
yeah,
you don't get to see the true greatness of what both of these guys can do.
Yeah,
and it's disappointing. That right there is disappointing. But also, as something we've talked about repeatedly the last couple episodes, is that look at the five men that are in this storyline. Look at the potential six men
if you add Chad Gable, yeah.
Yeah, that if they can let him be added into this. Like, all the matches that you can have and stuff like that, it's like, so, like, in a way, when you look at this, this is just kind of a precursor to what potentially we could have down.
What they need to do is get out of the way and let these six men wrestle, because they're not doing that at the moment. They're overbooking everything. Just let these six men wrestle, and every time they step in the ring against each other, give them 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And just say go.
20 minute time limit, go. You got this. So, but yeah, no, I agree. Because not only that, but when you let them do that, the stories just write themselves.
Yeah.
So, So you got Cesaro getting the first win of WrestleMania.
Yeah.
Which then leads us.
That makes him two-time pre-show winner now.
Yeah, that's right. Because of the Andre
armbar.
Yep, he won the first ever one, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah. tells you how much we pay attention to that thing.
What an armbar actually does for your career.
So going into the main card, the first matchup, I know you have comments on this, especially in regards to the camera and edits, is the Women's Tag Team Championship matchup between the Kabuki Warriors and Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross. So as I already mentioned, you had texted me about like the cameras and angles.
I do believe the term was, I just rage quit WrestleMania.
Yes. And you have a good reason too, because like in the beginning portion of this matchup, when they're outside the ring.
So let me,
it's really messy.
Line it up for everyone at home. I didn't watch WrestleMania live either night. I had other things I was doing. But what I did do is, like, when WrestleMania night one ended, about 20 minutes later, I had nothing to do, so I started watching the replay, and I caught up the next morning, and then night two I watched Monday morning. So I'm watching the replay, and all I can see from Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross versus the Kabuki Warriors is slip after mispositioned the camera. And then there was a moment when they were on the outside and Kairi Sane, I think it is, thrown into the barricade and she runs into a cameraman. I'd like to remind everyone that WrestleMania was pre-recorded. There are so many options here. Yell cut. Refilm it. Just edit that bit out. There's all kinds of things you could do.
Yeah.
Use a different camera angle.
And here's the thing, and it's something that I noticed a bit more on night two. Because you can hear via the commentary where edits were done.
Yeah. You can also,
yeah.
There's also a moment later, and we'll get to this motherfucker. Holy shit, we'll get to this motherfucker. Where Gronk's being interviewed, the Zubaz wearing dickweed himself. I don't even know what the fuck is a Gronk.
Besides just the shortening of his last name, I don't fucking
know. But who is he?
He's that guy from the New England Patriots that won 3 Super Bowls and stuff. And he's now an NFL analyst for Fox.
Okay, whatever. But the point is, there's a moment in this where he's being interviewed and he says, I sure would like to win the 24/7 championship by the event of tonight, WrestleMania tonight. How did that remain in your broadcast? Retake the interview. This shit ain't live.
Yep. So, oh man. I really did not like the Gronk stuff, the Rob Gronkowski.
To go back to
Bliss and the Bliss Tag
and Kabuki Warriors, it's sad because they actually had a very good match. My predictions, I had Bliss and Nikki Cross winning. We didn't do predictions for this because
we didn't know.
We didn't know what the matches were going to be. But like in my written down predictions, I had Bliss and Nikki Cross winning.
And not only that, but it's also kind of good that it just ended up being these two teams because the original plan before coronavirus
was
to add in Natalya and Beth Phoenix. Yeah.
Yeah. Fuck that. What have they done to win a title shot?
And not only that, but like the fact that this happened, it actually worked out better to have just the two teams rather than the triple threat that was originally planned.
Well, yeah, I mean, also, what the fuck have Beth and Natalya got to done to earn a fucking title shot?
Like, as a tag team, as of lately, nothing.
Exactly, so they shouldn't be in the fucking match. And we'll get to that. One of the things that AEW is making me realize, right? And I'm not saying it's making me realize it. I'd realized this for a lot of time. With the exception of the 24/7 championship, because that is the natural essence of the 24/7 championship, right? I can't stand it when people who haven't earned title shots are injected into the title scene. I can't fucking stand it.
Yeah.
And I've known that for so long, but to see such a stark contrast to something like this, where we're talking about, oh, they were just going to put Natalya and Beth Phoenix in the match. Whereas you look over at AEW and you're seeing the rankings, no matter how stupid the fucking rankings are and how they don't actually make a whole lot of sense, they at least stick to them occasionally. Right? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, but at least in this storyline here between the Kabuki Warriors and Bliss and Cross,
yeah,
like Bliss and Cross has a legitimate reason to be in this match because they were the ones who lost the titles.
They never got the rematch.
And they never got their rematch. So,
and now there's gonna be some person out there going, but don't you remember the thing where they were all like, oh, automatic rematches have been abolished in the WWE right now. And what the fuck was Angel Garza and Austin Theory against the Street Profits last night where they had a rematch?
Yeah.
They weren't even the previous champions and they got a rematch.
Yeah. So, I mean, but that's the thing though. At least storyline wise, it made sense to have Bliss and Cross in this match.
And, absolutely, it did.
Yeah.
They've been building it for months.
Yeah. And I'm glad that I've seen, you know, Bliss and Cross win the titles back.
Yeah.
So, which actually,
I'm gonna say it here. This was the start of the culmination of a really good weekend for Britain, aka Scotland.
Yes.
So right now, British champions or the UK champions or however you want to look at it, you've got Kayla. Other than the NXT UK champions, obviously, you've got Drew, which we'll get to.
Yep.
You've got Nikki Cross, and you've got Jordan Devlin.
Yep. Oh. Yep. And then if you want to go out there, Scotland alone.
Yeah.
It's Drew, Nikki, Kaylee Ray,
yeah,
and Gallus.
And Gallus.
Yeah.
Not that Kaylee Ray counts.
Yeah. But
we worked it out the other day. She's defended her title once in 9 months.
Yeah, but actually, I've known
people that have had more babies than that in 9 months.
Damn. But I think the person who actually put it out there was Mark Coffey.
What happened is that they had it was BT, WWE on BT, because that's the new home of WWE in England. They had a four-way thing with all of the other champions going into night two that were like, come on, Drew, including Nikki Cross.
Yeah, and then there was I think after Drew won, they updated the graphic to have all five Scotland champions, and then I think that's when I saw Mark Coffey do his tweet about it. So overall, good. I mean, take out the camera stuff and the editing stuff.
Yeah.
Good match.
Strong match.
Good start to the pay-per-view, too, when you look at it from that
I liked very much... A lot of people have been like, oh, the Kabuki Warriors are just being loud to cover the lack of crowd. But they were like that when there was a crowd, too. So...
Oh, yeah. And that's the thing. It's like, that's just how, you know... I think we just don't realize it because, when you're there live, you're watching on television, unless the camera's, right up on the wrestlers and the mic on the camera's picking it up.
Yeah.
They are talking to each other. They are smack-talking each other and stuff like that throughout the match.
Or calling spots.
Yeah, or calling spots.
But I can't imagine how hard it must be to hide calling spots in an empty arena when the camera's right here.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that's where some of that smack talk comes in at. You know, they say to each other, when I say this to you, this specific smack talk, this is where, this is the spot call.
Yeah.
And, but like, but that's the thing though. Like wrestlers always, like when we go to house shows and stuff like that, when we went to NXT and stuff like that, you can kind of like, especially in a smaller venue, you can hear the trash talking.
Yeah.
And that's just a natural thing. And that's something
that we'll get to that when we get to the Intercontinental title match, because I have a lot to say there.
Oh, yeah. But the thing is, though, is that that's something that is kind of lost with an audience.
Yeah.
Is the trash talking. So next up, we have Elias versus King Corbin. So just to preface this a little bit real quick, the storyline going into this match is that it was still unknown if Elias would be able to compete after being attacked by Corbin 8 days prior on SmackDown, as he was thrown off the little balcony. So rightfully so, King Corbin would come out and demand for the referee to declare him the winner. However, Elias would show up for this match. What are your thoughts on this match?
The inside of my bathroom looked great.
I've been reading that the number one thing about this match was the referee, which was Jessica Carr.
Yeah. I went and took a pee. So it was a 9-minute match. Elias sure got him some revenge for being thrown off the dais by winning with a roll-up. One thing I will say is constantly throughout this WrestleMania, there were some excellent sound effects. And I don't mean like post-processed added sound effects. I mean just good sound effects. Like when at the beginning of this match, Baron Corbin runs at Elias. And Elias ducks, hits him in the stomach, and then breaks the guitar over his back. It was like the perfect echoey thud of a guitar break, right? It was just right. You know what I mean?
Because it's like, you know, and that's another thing, like, you know, what we just talked about with Asuka and the women's match. You know, it's something that's also kind of lost with a crowd.
Yeah.
How would that have sounded in a stadium?
It would have been a much more deadened sound.
Yeah. So getting something like that, you know, is really kind of cool to listen to in the sea at the same time. Also, one of the funny things about this match is that, as you mentioned, Elias would do the roll up for the victory. He also held Corbin's tights for the victory. So he pulled a heel move on the heel to get the victory.
Yeah.
So it was kind of an interesting little note there for that. Match number 3. I'm a little surprised this match went as early as it did. And that's the Raw Women's Championship match between Becky Lynch and Shayna Baszler. And I can already tell by the look on your face that you were
paying for this match. Now, people who have listened to our stuff for a very long time are going to recognize this sound. Because that's the sound of me opening up a can of Budweiser on this episode. on this match.
Wait. Hold on. It's my half-assed attempt at doing...
What the fuck was this match?
So, real quick, let me throw this out there. And this is what I wrote on the website as part of my recap for night one. So this match being third on the card is pretty interesting. There had been rumors that this match was going to close the show, and also getting both women's matches done early, to many was not a satisfactory feeling, especially for those who are really big fans of women's wrestling and the storylines that have been put in, especially for Becky and Shayna. So it makes you wonder what's in store for the women's matches on night 2, which we'll talk about later.
Yeah.
For that. So, in regards to the match,
it was shitty.
Yeah, it wasn't top level Becky Lynch number one, and I definitely think for Shayna the empty arena kind of messed with her.
Nope.
No?
Nope.
wasn't, you don't think Shayna was the problem?
They don't get, you don't get to say the empty arena messed with them. It was pre-recorded. Retape the fucking match.
Yeah.
This match was booked and agented like ass. Number one. Why the fuck is Becky driving up to the performance center in a big rig? Forget that. We'll talk about the actual fucking match, shall we? This match went 8.5 minutes. Elias and King Corbin went longer. The piss break match. This was the, with the exception of maybe Sami Zayn, Daniel Bryan, and maybe Undertaker, AJ Styles, this was the match on night one with the most storyline going into it, because it's been building since Survivor Series. And they fucked it up. Number one, regardless of anything else, Shayna ran through the entire Raw Women's Division at Elimination Shayna. I know what I said.
The Elimination Shayna.
She absolutely embarrassed them. Only to then lose to Becky? What does that say about the rest of the division? And is anyone on Becky's level? There is no credible threat left on Raw to Becky. Yes, because they're building up for the return of Ronda Rousey, blah, 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 blah. I don't give a fuck.
Yeah, and
number two.
Well, I was going to add into the win thing. The interesting thing about the win was it's the exact same way I believe Kairi Sane beat.
We're going to get to that. That's not interesting. That's fucking stupid. You know why? Go back to the Royal Rumble. Listen to our review of the Royal Rumble. What made Shayna such an excellent NXT champion is she learned. She learned as she was going on. Yes, Kairi Sane did the backflip roll thing to get to pin her that one time. Then everyone else who tried that, she had a counter for it. How did she suddenly fucking forget it? Yep. The submission magician, the technical mercurial, she looked like a fucking idiot. It goes back to what I said about the Royal Rumble, where because Charlotte fucked up the spot, she had to run into Charlotte skinning the cat 3 times. And they've proven beforehand, Shayna is not stupid enough to do that. They've proven before, Shayna isn't stupid enough to fall for this roll-up. So why did it work? There's no... And if you want to put Becky over to protect the Ronda Rousey thing, fine. Don't make Shayna look stupid. Especially... Then don't not follow up on it on Raw. Neither,
how much was followed up on Raw?
Quite a bit was followed up on Raw. Even okay. Becky and Shayna were on Raw, but there was no talk of. I don't know. Anyway, yeah. And on top of that, on top of all of that, you took one of the most built-up storylines on WrestleMania, and you put it on third. And if what you're trying to do is make Becky look badass for when Ronda gets back, you don't do that by having her winning with a roll-up. Also, in case you hadn't noticed, usually when Shayna puts the clutch on someone, she locks the legs around them. Why didn't she do it this time?
Yeah.
And we talked about this on Paradox. Continuity.
Yep. Continuity, continuity.
Do better, WWE.
Yep. Coming up next, you have match number 4, the Intercontinental Championship. I literally wrote this in the recap. First and foremost, Ben and I have said it a few times now on AwesomeMania that the WWE just needs to take all 5 of these men, and let's get Chad Gable involved as well, because these are extremely talented individuals. And to prove that right away, Sami Zayn in this match.
Yeah, like, one of the things I really liked about this match, Kevin Owens and Seth Rollins did it as well, is they didn't, most of the other matches, with the exception of the two that I just mentioned, and of course the Boneyard match, because it's the fucking Boneyard match, they just did the same match they do if there were a crowd. Like, Baron Corbin, and he even worked the announcers like he would work a crowd normally, right? Yelling at Michael Cole and JBL. Speaking of which, it's John O'Clock, motherfucker.
I was waiting for that right there.
I was waiting to be mentioned him the first time. But they not only wrestled the match that they would wrestle, they also thought about things to say, things to communicate between each other, so that the empty arena didn't feel quite so empty. Edge and Orton had a little bit of this, not as much on night 2. They were kind of the only people that really did it on night 2. But yeah, this was, well, it wasn't a great match. It was a great match, if that makes any sense. Like, the wrestling wasn't necessarily the greatest, but it was a good story. Yeah. With, like, the start with Sami Zayn running away and all of that. But it was, again, it was overbooked, the whole Gulak and the other goons on the outside getting involved, and just let them wrestle.
Yeah. But like, just watching what they were doing was just so much fun, and it was funny. Like, especially the stuff with Sammy. I especially enjoy the part where it's like Gulak disperses of Nakamura and Cesaro, which, where did they go? Did they just fall into an endless pit when he threw him over the barricade or something? But but like, then he's like face to face with Sami Zayn, and you just hear Daniel Bryan just go, no, Drew, it's okay. Let him go. It's okay. And Sami's like, thanks, Daniel. This is the smartest thing you've ever done. And he just starts walking up the ramp, and then Daniel Bryan just comes after him and just starts pummeling him and throws him in the ring. That's great storytelling right there.
Yeah.
It's hilarious. Because it's like the heel thinks he's going to get away with it. It's like, nope. But Sami Zayn would retain the title and is still your Intercontinental Champion.
Yeah, he retained with Daniel Bryan went up to the top rope, went for a dive, and Daniel Bryan just haluva kicked him in the head, which made me shudder.
Yeah. So, and which was also a different take on the haluva kick too.
Yeah.
Because normally he does it into the corner. This time he did it to somebody coming.
And he wasn't running. He wasn't moving. He was just stood still and just held his foot up.
Yeah.
Kicked dude in the head.
Wow. But next up, you have the triple threat ladder match, where it would be Kofi Kingston versus John Morrison versus Jimmy Uso for the SmackDown Tag Team Championships. Sounds kind of weird, saying that it's for the SmackDown Tag Team titles when only three men are in the match and not all six.
Yep.
But obviously, with The Miz becoming sick, that's why this happened. We still got a pretty fun one.
Yeah.
Out of this. This was a good ladder match. This was a really good ladder match between all three men. I like, dare I say, barn burner?
It wasn't the best match,
but it was up.
It was good. It was very good.
Yeah. Definitely all three men laid it out on the line. Some of the key moments that peaked out for me was like Morrison tightrope walking the top rope to hit the Spanish fly on Kofi. Mm-hmm. Which would then be followed by the splash from Jimmy. I actually liked how Morrison had the luck where he slides under the ladder and then Jimmy pushes the ladder and the ladder just goes around Morrison and doesn't even hit him. And Morrison's just like, shoulder shrug, laugh. So there are definitely some really good spots. I think one of the craziest things, though, was the finish.
Yeah.
To this match.
So, what I really, really wanted to happen, like, really wanted to happen, was that Kofi would get one belt and Jimmy Uso would get the other one, and they would become tag team champions and feud with Jay and Big E. Because I think that would be hilarious.
Would be hilarious. Well, you almost got that.
Yeah. So when they pulled the triangle down, I was like, here we go. But no. It was a very creative ending. A very creative ending.
And it makes you wonder where that can actually potentially go down the line, because storyline-wise, because like, in a way, both the Usos and the New Day have a claim to say, hey, technically we won that match. It's just that you fell off the ladder and was able to rip the belts off, even though we had already taken it off of the Clampett thing.
We'll have to see what happens on Friday.
Yeah. So that'll be definitely interesting and worth wanting to watch.
Yeah.
But yeah, but great finish though. That was a
very creative finish.
Yeah.
It's like every now and again when they're doing ladder matches and things like that, they come with a very creative finish. Like there was the one finish where whoever was at the top dropped the title and Dolph Ziggler ran over and grabbed it, and then when the referees turned around, they saw Dolph Ziggler with the title and ended the match. That was very creative for the Intercontinental belt. But
yeah. Next up we have Kevin Owens versus Seth Rollins. I thought this was a solid matchup between
match
two quality
of the weekend
talents. Yeah,
match of the weekend.
I liked how they went the route of the disqualification, and then Owens is like, "Oh hell no, we're not."
I didn't like that. It just felt a bit overbooked to me, but yeah, kind of.
But in a way, if it wasn't for that, we wouldn't have gotten what is referred to as now the first WrestleMania moment.
I think we still could have just
with the ladder the match.
No, we would have got this. We could have got the sign spot. Just the match would have had to have been agented differently.
Yeah,
you can't say. And this is what annoys me about a lot of things. Is like, oh, if we hadn't had the DQ for this, we wouldn't have had the sign spot. Have you seen a Shane McMahon match?
Yeah, dude doesn't need a disqualification match. He just does it.
Exactly.
So does Shawn Michaels.
We absolutely could have got that spot. It would have just had to have gotten to differently.
Yeah. And I'll throw this out there. It's actually kind of cool seeing how that's the actual. So, like, if you've ever been to a Raw or a SmackDown from Royal Rumble,
yeah,
in that road to Rumble, that's the freaking sign that's hanging in the arena.
Yeah,
that just goes to show you how big in scale that thing really is when they have that hanging in the rafters for the shows. So that was really cool. And actually, we ended up finding out that Kevin Owens actually revealed on Twitter the very next day that he actually had it planned that if they were still in Tampa at the stadium, that they were actually going to work a spot with the pirate ship.
Yeah.
That would have been really cool to see. But to see the thing with the sign at the same time was just as cool.
Yeah. I don't know. This was the best match of the weekend for me. He says, sitting here in a Kevin Owens hat.
By a smudge. No, I'm just kidding with you. But
it was by far. We did miss out one match, but we'll get back to that. Kevin Owens and Seth Rollins, and this is another case of them having thought through what they wanted to say to each other to not make the arena seem quite so empty. They were very much verbalizing and talking and using the intimate atmosphere to their advantage.
And not only that, but like using it as a way to really tell their story.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, while an empty arena is not ideal because you don't have the crowd there to build work off of, you're still able to build a story with like what we saw with Owens and Rollins and Bryan and Zayn. Uh-huh. So. So
the one thing that we did miss is what is probably the most important moment of the weekend is the fact that Mojo Rawley won the 24/7 championship from R-Truth.
After throwing Gronk off of R-Truth.
Between the ladder match and Owens Rollins.
Yeah. Which obviously they did to do as a build-up.
Tonight, too.
And then what will eventually probably happen at SummerSlam if it does ever happen in Boston.
Yeah.
I didn't really write about it in my recap because to me it just was like, eh.
It's not that fair, dude. Like, think about it. That is a title change at WrestleMania.
Yeah.
You gotta give Mojo his props, man, at the end of the day.
Yeah, even though he's your ever so favorite. I'm hype.
But don't get me wrong. Fuck the guy. Right? But still.
Yeah.
You gotta give the man his
and it, when you look at it from a storytelling perspective of what they're trying to build to at later on at SummerSlam. It works because they're planting the seeds. And then also to kind of go back to your thing earlier where how they did the interview of Rob Gronkowski, mm-hmm. and how he said that he wanted to leave the night as the 24/7 champion. I mean,
the night event Mania Wrestle.
Yeah. Well, he almost did. He got a 2 count before Mojo threw him off.
Yeah.
So next up you have the Universal Championship match between Goldberg and Braun Strowman. I did it wrong. Apparently Goldberg hit 4 spears and 4 power slams by Braun Strowman. And we have a new Universal Champion. That's all you need to know. 4 spears, 4 power slams.
This match went 2 minutes and 10 seconds,
but at the same time, good for Braun though.
No, fuck Braun. No. Not good for Braun.
Okay.
Braun doesn't deserve this. He's been treading his wheels for 6 months, if not more. The last relevant thing he did was win the tag titles with a 10-year-old. And then insulted every independent worker in wrestling. Fuck that guy.
Yeah. So, but he's got the title. I think also a reasoning.
What is also worth noting is it he took more spears than Brock Lesnar.
Really?
Brock took 3.
Mm. Yeah, that's right, because Braun took
and then 4. Lost.
Yeah, but I also see the reasoning for putting the title on Braun because obviously they were going to take the title off of Goldberg one way or the other.
Then don't put it on him in the fucking first place.
Which they shouldn't have done in the first fucking place, but they did anyways. I know, it was bad booking to put the title on Goldberg in the first place.
Bad booking to even put it on The Fiend.
Yeah. Well, no, you and I agree on that. The Fiend never needs the title.
Just fucking... especially with the bullshit the Fiend pulls on night two. We'll get to that.
So, well,
fuck me. What a waste of a fucking... Stop this shit, WWE.
Yep. So
your two title matches across both nights. This one went 2 minutes 10 seconds. Drew McIntyre, Brock Lesnar went 4 minutes 35. They went at a combined 6 minutes and 35 seconds. It takes Undertaker longer than that to get to the ring most nights. Your two top titles were an embarrassment. Absolute embarrassment. Whether it was because Brock and Goldberg were like, well, we don't actually want to have matches at the performance center. We just want to show up at Guitar Perry tracks. Because you know Brock can go when he wants to. Look at the matches he puts up, put the triple threat he put on with AJ Seth and Cena.
Yeah,
Look at the solo match he had with AJ. Look at the matches he had with Daniel Bryan. When Brock wants to go, he can go. He couldn't be fucked.
Well, not only that, but apparently reports came out after everything was taped that Brock Lesnar went into Vince's office and ripped him a new asshole for even thinking about doing WrestleMania still and still going on with this.
Oh, fuck Brock.
And remember how, which WrestleMania was it where Lesnar, I think he retained over Reigns and he just chucked the title at Vince?
I don't care.
Well, it's kind of like that same situation with Brock.
No, it's not. Because he tried in the match against Roman. The match against Drew was, but we'll get to the actual, but the point being, when the WWE and Universal title matches run a combined 6 minutes and 45 seconds, you fucked up WrestleMania. Think about this time last year. Right?
Yeah.
This time last year, we got Kofi Mania. Right?
Yep.
And the other title match was...
I think it was...
Brock Seth.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
To put it in perspective, Brock Seth technically only went 2.5 minutes. Right? But that's because Brock was beating the shit out of Seth on the outside for like 5 minutes beforehand. Right? They hadn't gotten in the belt. They hadn't gotten in the ring. Kofi Daniel Bryan went 23 minutes.
Yeah.
Just... And you wonder why your titles don't mean anything, WWE. To put this in perspective, to put it another way, right? Let me do a little bit. You talk a little bit about this match, right? And I just need to click on a couple of things and look at something.
In regards to the
just
Universal?
In general. Just in general. Yeah.
Universal, I mean what you said is pretty much it. I mean, there's not much I can say. But it also, you know, piggybacking off of the thing about Kofi Mania last year and the thing with Seth and Lesnar was that you can also tell the difference between when you have a part-time champion and a full-time champion.
Yeah.
Full-time as in Daniel Bryan, part-time as in Brock Lesnar. So the quality or the length of the length quality of the matches are not going to be there with a part-time champion, whereas it's going to be there with somebody who's there, you know, day in, day out, like a Daniel Bryan or a Kofi Kingston and stuff like that.
So, to give you an idea, right? Bill Goldberg was born in 1966, right?
Yeah.
So that makes him how old?
Like at least 54?
Right. Chris Jericho is only 4 years younger than Bill Goldberg. And Chris Jericho's last title defense went 22 minutes and 20 seconds. Think about that.
Yeah, I mean, and then put the other thing, and you know, and I'm not discounting Jericho on this, but Jericho does this night in and night out still.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. Whereas Goldberg, he's there for the paycheck.
So Goldberg's 54.
Oh, wow.
Jericho's 50. Oh. Jericho's 50. Yeah. Jericho's last total defense went 22 minutes and 20 seconds. Goldberg went 2 minutes and 10 seconds.
Tells you who's really more passionate about it at their age than the other.
Well.
So. All right. Main event is the Boneyard match between The Undertaker and AJ Styles.
Yeah.
So first off, I want to say this right now. I know you and I will probably have a differing opinion on this. I personally loved it. I was entertained by it. And I overall enjoyed it.
I thoroughly enjoyed this.
Yeah. But I think the key thing is that I don't think you loved it as much as I did.
Why?
I don't know. Like, just based off of, like, I don't know. I was trying to read off your text messages, and I was trying to get a vibe of the context, and I guess I couldn't read the context on that one.
No, I thoroughly enjoyed the Boneyard match.
Okay, awesome. Then we're on the same page
with the problem I have with the Boneyard match is...
Who went over?
Well, there's partly that. But if The Undertaker was going to go over, this is the way you put him over. Right?
Yeah.
The problem now becomes, right, WrestleMania 37.
Mm.
When The Undertaker goes back to a normal in-ring match.
See, that's an interesting thing that you just brought up. Because what happens if Taker doesn't go to 37?
But this is what I'm saying is this is either the last we ever see of The Undertaker, or they need to pre-record every single Undertaker match like this from now on.
Yeah. And
because it is the only way they can cover for his problems.
Yeah. And there's two things that I want to throw out there. The first one is actually something that we found out after the fact, which was a conversation apparently between Taker and Kurt Angle. Mm-hmm. Because apparently Taker was telling Angle that he was really pissed off about how his last singles match, which was against Goldberg at Super Showdown, was a complete and utter shit show. And he wanted to redeem himself for that. And Angle recommended AJ Styles.
Yeah.
To be it, because AJ would get a good match, not a great match, but a good match out of The Undertaker.
No one could get a great match out of The Undertaker anymore.
But then one of the great things about having it be pre-recorded is that, you know, Triple H was, I guess, the head person in charge of this, and he was just like, improvise everything. Just go. Do whatever you guys want to do.
Well, they had spots planned. What he let them improvise is what they were saying.
Yeah, like the trash talk and stuff like that. But But the second thing is the thing that we ended up finding out also during the night, which we'll probably go more into on Saturday's episode, our normal episode, and that's the limited series event on The Undertaker.
Yeah, we'll go into that on Saturday.
Yeah, but and I think that's
the subtitle of which is The End Is Near.
Yeah, which leads me to believe it might be Survivor Series, but we'll talk more about that on Saturday.
Yeah.
But I love this. I loved almost every aspect of this. I love the Easter egg that Taker told them to do with the AJ hand, which ended up being like a wooden hand sticking out of the dirt, like because he wanted to throw that out there to the longtime fans of like 1996 for that Buried Alive match and stuff like that. So like the fact that he had to fight his own druids, that's like something from a video game, dude. Like it really is. And I think the fact that, and we really saw it more on display in this one. We'll talk soon about the Firefly Funhouse.
Oh thing. Yeah, we will.
And I actually have a separate set of notes about that because it somebody broke it down and I want to bring that up for the Firefly Funhouse
one. Sure.
But this also shows that WWE can really do some special stuff cinematic wise.
Yeah, here's the two things that really got to me. The people saying that they loved the moment when The Undertaker popped up behind AJ Styles, who had less than a week earlier been like, oh, Matt Hardy teleporting's fucking stupid.
Yeah. I thought the way AEW did his teleportation was weird with the way they edited it, but I didn't have a problem with him teleporting because I knew that's what was part of his gimmick and part of his character. So it didn't bother me. The part that bothered me.
And the second thing is, and this is Matt Hardy again.
Yeah.
Matt Hardy's like, final deletion. Vince is like, I don't fucking get it. Undertaker's like, boneyard match. And Vince is like, it's such good shit.
Yeah, it's... Well, I think the difference between a final deletion and a boneyard match...
wasn't that much difference.
Well, I mean, there wasn't that much difference, but I think there's the way of the pitch that's different. Of, Vince, we want to have this match be in a graveyard. And have it essentially be like a Buried Alive match.
Yeah, but it was
and I think
still
that just, was the
it was still was still was hokey and dumb.
Yeah. I definitely agree, but I think that
they killed Carl Anderson. He was still on the roof when it exploded.
They killed Luke Gallows too. They threw him off a roof, you know.
He at least didn't get blown up.
That's true. But I think that's the difference. I think when Matt pitched Final Deletion, he pitched too much. But when this match, this cinematic match was pitched, it was simplified to the idea.
Well, this wasn't originally going to be a cinematic match. That's the thing. Yeah. Well, this was originally going to be Undertaker and AJ in a ring and AJ struggling to get a decent match out of an old man.
Yeah. But I think
Undertaker fans.
But the thing is I think when things change, when the coronavirus just ran rampant and things changed, obviously there are pitches and stuff like that going around, like, what can we do? And I think that's the difference between, again, Matt Hardy's Final Deletion, where you have to put out all this stuff, and maybe it's too much being thrown in there in the pitch, whereas this is just maybe a simpler pitch of, we want to have it in a graveyard. All right, what do you want to call it? Boneyard match. All right. It's a simplified pitch compared to a Final Deletion match.
Mainly because we can't call it a Buried Alive match.
Yeah. So, but that's just all I'm saying on that. It's probably just the way things were pitched between when Matt Hardy did his.
But it does show that Matt Hardy had a freaking point.
Oh, yeah. Oh, 100%. And Matt deserved all the love that he got online too for it, because in a way, if it wasn't for
had this match happened in any other way, like in a ring, in the arena, in like in the parking lot, in a boiler room, anything like that, if it happened any other way, AJ should have gone over.
Yeah.
this was the only way
to have Taker go over.
Have Taker go over realistically.
And in a weird way, it was kind of cool seeing Taker back as American Badass, because he wasn't really playing Taker at that point. He was playing Mark Calloway.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's the one thing I remember you always saying is, like, when you saw The Undertaker come out as the American Badass, that wasn't The Undertaker. That was Mark Calloway.
And that's been Mark Calloway ever since to me.
I've called
him The Undertaker so people knew who I was talking about.
Yeah. But, like, that was a good way for him to, A, still be, like, The Undertaker, but be also be the American Badass Mark Calloway in this match.
What I think would have been great is if, when AJ threw him in the grave and he teleported behind him, he teleported behind him in full Undertaker gear. But
I'm not going to lie. I really like Taker's vest. That was like if you looked on the back, how it had like his Taker symbol on the back. Yeah. Like I was like, that was a nice looking vest.
The other thing I really loved, it just, it hit me in my soul when they stood on the edge and the Undertaker's got AJ and AJ's just like, don't bury me, man. Don't bury me. I was like, sorry, AJ, you're getting buried. And not just in under some dirt, dude.
But I liked how, like, you know, Taker has him in the choke slam hold, and AJ's like, I'm sorry, and like Taker's like, don't worry, man, I ain't gonna throw you in there. And
best bit is like when he's like, I'm sorry, I'm like, what are you sorry for? Like a dad, he's like, what are you sorry for, AJ?
But like the great thing though is like he's got him in that choke hold with like, yeah, he's gonna choke slam him in, and it's like, I ain't gonna choke slam yet, it's okay. And he gives him that hug. It's like, you gave up a good fight, you really did.
They had to have that in there so that when AJ comes back, everyone's not like, haha, you lost to a 60-year-old man who's a wizard.
Actually, the crazy thing is this. Have you seen like some of the things that people have been posting? It's like AJ Styles coming back as the zombie from WWE 2K or something like that. Like that's actually a great question. Like, how does, in a booking sense, AJ come back from this?
You show a thing with Gallows and Anderson digging him up after The Undertaker drove off.
Yeah. Just
booking wise, you have him off until Survivor Series. You have The Undertaker have his final match at Survivor Series. You win that. And then you have Undertaker, AJ show up and end The Undertaker. You have the Phenom ended by the Phenomenal One.
Yeah. Like, actually, one.
Or you have Undertaker, you have AJ come back as like a mini Undertaker, and he's called the Phenomenal One.
But one thing that I was also thinking about that would make sense.
Very nice hair.
Yeah, he does have very nice hair. Better than mine. But one thing I was also thinking of is
bald man has better hair than you, Mike. I know.
Thanks. one of the things that I was thinking about
was so out of order. Funny.
I know. But one of the things I was thinking about is like. Maybe not bring him back to TV right away. Have something where it's Gallows. Oh, yeah. Have it where Gallows and Anderson is on television right away.
Yeah.
And have them kind of going like,
but one of them's dead.
But have them kind of go like, you know, for a while, like they get interviewed like by like say Charlie Caruso and go, hey, how's AJ? And they just won't respond. And then after a while, they finally go, You just kind of catch him in the locker room talking about AJ, about how they're worried about AJ and how he's handling this loss to The Undertaker. And, you know, and then eventually, say like SummerSlam, you bring him back. And it's just this really broken down AJ who has lost himself in a way. And it just starts building towards this thing to Survivor Series with The Undertaker, where he's like, I have to fix this. I have to fix this for myself. I have to beat The Undertaker.
And so then, he's Shawn Michaels.
kind of in a way. I mean, hey,
that is the exact storyline that happened
with Sean. Sure. Yeah. But also in a way,
if they though, then, but what if they then echo that and have it be Undertaker's career on the line?
That's what I'm thinking for Survivor Series. Because keep in mind, it's also in a way, even though Taker beat Triple H, Taker in a way didn't walk out of that match. And he was like, I got to be able to beat you and walk out on my own.
Yeah.
So it's like, and that's the thing though, like with the right people, you can rehash some of these storylines and get us hook, line, and sinker. And I think with AJ, he is one of those guys that we can do that with.
Yeah.
And then have that match at Survivor Series between AJ and Taker, and that, and like you just said,
Taker goes out on his back.
Yeah. Because not only that, but Survivor Series is 30 years.
Yeah.
So, but
Undertaker is now also main event of WrestleMania in four different decades.
And let's see here. Hogan, I don't think, has done that. He's only done that in three. No, two. Because he was the second to last match in both 18 and 19.
Speaking of Hogan, we get to do night two soon. If you don't know what I'm talking about, be glad.
So, Hogan wasn't even on night two.
You'll see when we get there.
Uh-oh. All right, so ladies and gentlemen, with that, we're going to take a quick break when we come.
A.K.A. I'm going to go take a piss.
And when we come back, we're going to
talk. Hey, look, it's a lion as Baron Corbin.
And ladies and gentlemen, we'll be back with night number two.